On behalf of the University of California, Irvine, and the Center for Global Peace and Conflict Studies and the School of Social Sciences, I'm very pleased to welcome you to the Margolis Lecture. Professor Margolis was one of the early founding members of both the Center and UCI's Department of Economics, and unfortunately he's not able to be with us tonight. I have the privilege of introducing tonight's speaker, Dr. Graham Allison. Dr. Allison is the director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs and the Douglas Dillon Professor of Government at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. As founding dean, he built the School of Government from a small program to the major professional school of public policy and government that it is today. Dr. Allison has extensive experience outside of academics as well. He served as special advisor to the Secretary of Defense under President Reagan, and an Assistant Secretary of Defense for Policy and Plans under Clinton, where he has specialized on strategies and policies involving Russia, Ukraine, and other states of the Soviet Union. He twice received the Distinguished Public Service Medal, the highest award for the Department of Defense, and he has served as a member of the Defense Policy Board for Secretaries Weinberger, Carlucci, Cheney, Aspin, Perry, and Cohen. Dr. Allison is the author of several key books, including Essence of Decision, Explaining the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1971 and Revised in 1999, which is among the bestsellers in political science with more than 400,000 copies today. More recently, he has authored Avoiding Nuclear Anarchy, Containing the Threat of Loose Russian Nuclear Weapons and Fissile Material in 1996, and Realizing Human Rights, Moving from Inspiration to Impact in 2000. His most recent book is Nuclear Terrorism, the Ultimate Preventable Catastrophe, which was selected by the New York Times as one of the 100 most notable books of 2004. And this is also the title of tonight's talk. We're very, very pleased to welcome Mr. Graham Allison.
I'll hold you just a second. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dean Doscher, and thank you very much for coming tonight. It's a great honor and pleasure for me to be here at Irvine, and it's a special honor and pleasure to be giving the 16th annual Margolis Lecture, since I've had the opportunity over my career to know and read Julie Margolis. I think that his works on national security and on the behavior of governments have illuminated the landscape for all of us, and I've had the opportunity to talk with him over the years about even issues of nuclear danger. So this is a special treat for me to be part of the recognition of not only the topic, but of Julie himself. Tonight I'm going to talk about two big ideas. First, the proposition that on the current course, if we continue on the present trajectory, I believe the likelihood of our seeing a nuclear weapon explode in one of our cities is greater than even. That is, that there's a higher than 51% chance of a nuclear bomb exploding in one of our cities before the end of a decade from when this book was written, that is, by 2014. That's the first big idea. So just stay on autopilot, and we see a nuclear 9/11. The second big idea is that this does not have to happen. This is not written inevitably in the cards. This is, as the subtext of this book that the dean mentioned, the subtitle is actually the most important part, the ultimate preventable catastrophe. Now, the first idea and the second idea are kind of a little bit in competition, maybe even contradictory. And so it's the contrast of those two ideas, the first being very bad news, and the second being, I think, quite good news that'll motivate the lecture. The way I propose to proceed tonight is I'm going to begin with a short clip, it's about 6.5 or 7 minutes, from a docudrama called Last Best Chance that provides a vivid picture of how terrorists might acquire a nuclear bomb and bring it to an American city. This docudrama, Last Best Chance, was created by the Nuclear Threat Initiative, which is an organization in Washington, a nonprofit, created by Ted Turner and Sam Nunn, and now run by Sam Nunn. And the text for this docudrama was developed in conjunction with experts, including I worked on it quite a lot. So everything about the story is realistic. That is, nothing is contrary to known science or politics or fact, though the story itself is hypothetical. And in the story you'll see, I was not involved in the casting of this, but in any case, when they decided whom to cast for president, they picked Fred Thompson, this again 2 years ago, and you can see he does his job rather well. In fact, I was teasing earlier with Cecile that when this was excerpted and discussed on in the Tim Russert show on one of the Sunday morning shows, they had Thompson and Sam Nunn and Dick Lugar, you know, there for the presentations. And Thompson observed that, as he said, this is a wonderful country. He says, on the most important issue of our times, in order to become credible in talking about this issue, I had to leave the Senate and become an actor. So in any case, the phase one of the presentation is this 7-minute clip. Phase two will be about a half-hour PowerPoint in which I'll summarize for you the argument of this book, Nuclear Terrorism, and try to connect it to current events, including in Iran, where I'm actually going on Wednesday night, and in North Korea, which I've been watching very closely. So second is just the summary, and then third, we'll turn to questions and answers, where I'll look forward to your challenging the argument, because I'm giving you my best summary of what I believe, but I have no notion that I have a monopoly of wisdom on this topic, and I'd particularly appreciate people that have a contrary point of view. So if I get my technical assistance here, we'll try to put up the Last Best Chance.
А как они вам, мой друг, платят за вашу важную работу?
Часто опаздывают. Всегда на них хватает. Нам квартира побольше нужна.
В советские времена была такая присказка. Мы делаем вид, что работаем, а они, что нам платят. Павел, в этом конверте ваша зарплата за 5 лет. Авиабилеты в Венгрию. Она же венгерка, ваша жена, да?
Да.
Венгерские паспорта на новые имена. А визы мы можем достать в любую страну мира, куда вы только с семьей захотите уехать.
А две боеголовки?
Только две.
Только две. Не видишь уже их прямо через проходную?
Ну как? Мы дадим вам почти настоящие документы, чтобы вывести боеголовки на профилактику. Пожалуйста. Павел с одним нашим знакомым приедет на военном грузовике, чтобы отвезти их на профилактику. Все будет как обычно.
Потом ваши клиенты их используют. Погибнут тысячи людей.
Если не у нас, они достанут их где-нибудь еще.
Both Canadian citizens?
We are.
I know that we're a target, but you could be as well. And we both know that if a bomb goes off, regardless of the source, our military forces will go to DEFCON 2.
We'd have the same response.
No criticism intended, but your early warning system is eroded. And could mistakenly think they're seeing an American missile headed toward Russia. One false move could be catastrophic. That might be part of the terrorist plan.
You and I must be in immediate contact at all times. We don't want our nuclear command system or yours launching missiles at each other.
Thank you, Dmitry. Let's keep an open line. Can you and this group of wizards here explain to me just how the hell we got here?
Sir, Al-Qaeda has computed all the Muslims killed in the past 50 years. Bosnia, Afghanistan, Somalia, the whole Middle East. Their spokesman has publicly announced that they believe they're owed 4 million lives.
Well, they posted it on their website.
Nukes would be the fastest way to vengeance. The only way to stop them from exploding a nuclear bomb is to keep the components out of their hands. No nuclear materials, no nuclear weapons. No nuclear terrorism.
If they have a warhead, we probably can't find it.
Or if they have plutonium or highly enriched uranium, they could find someone who can make them a bomb.
We've been finding bomb diagrams in Al-Qaeda camps ever since Afghanistan.
The U.S., Russia, and every other member of the G8 pledged $20 billion to help secure the weapons, the HEU, and the plutonium.
Then why can't we keep Al-Qaeda from going nuclear?
Well, I said pledge, sir. Reality is, we've not collected much cash or made much progress yet.
How much of this stuff is in Russia?
Enough to make 60 to 80,000 bombs, sir.
How much is secure?
Less than half. There's still at least 300 metric tons at risk.
And how long until you're done?
Our goal is to get it done in 4 years.
At the present rate, it'll take at least 13 years.
Come on, Nick. That rate will all be dead before you finish.
It's complicated, sir. For example, both we and the Russians agreed that they needed fencing and nuclear sensors, which they can't afford. So we bought them. But then they can't pay to install them.
Well, we can.
We tried. But our lawyers say we need to be on every site to inspect the work to make sure it's done right.
And the Russians think we just want to spy. I mean, I heard that from Dmitry an hour ago.
We fight over travel visas, contracting rules. Who pays if a worker gets hurt? Who's liable in case of an accident?
Well, everyone here is going to be liable if an American city blows up. Nuclear terrorism is the most dangerous threat facing the world, and we're fighting over accounting rules and tax bills.
The terrorists are racing, and we're crawling.
All right, who in this group is responsible for nuclear terrorism? And who's in charge? Well, I guess old Harry Truman was right.
So in the first scene, you saw how a terrorist might get a bomb. In that instance, persuading some crooks inside to sell it. That's one of three scenarios presented in the movie. Second was getting some highly enriched uranium out of South Africa. So there's three good scenarios for that. Secondly, how would terrorists get a bomb to an American city? The Canadian border episode is very realistic. If the bomb were inside the box, but were wrapped in a camera case, lead bag, the machinery that the operator was operating would not detect that this was not something going to the museum, as in the scenario. But there's also a scenario for bringing a weapon on a boat from Mexico, which might be closer to home. And if you go sailing from Newport to Baja, when you come into American waters, there's no sign that says you've crossed over from Mexican to American waterways. And the chance, if you're on a sailboat, that you're inspected is pretty slim. And the third scenario says, what would an American government do if this was actually happening? And the answer is, the dialogue is quite realistic. Why didn't we do this before? What are our options now? So that's the picture in a nutshell, but let me try to lay out the argument here. Okay, some of you remember back, it may seem like 100 years ago, but this was in 2004. We had a presidential election. President Bush was running against Senator Kerry. In the first of the televised presidential debates, the moderator asked, what is the single most serious threat to the national security of the United States? Good question. Turned to Senator Kerry, who got to answer first. He said nuclear terrorism. Turned to President Bush, who said, I agree with my opponent. This actually led to a bit of a gasp in the audience, because if you remember, this was a hotly contested election. This is the only time in the whole election that either candidate used this sequence of words. I agree with my opponent. In any case, he said, I agree with my opponent that the biggest threat facing the country is nuclear weapons in the hands of a terrorist network. So did they get the answer right? I believe absolutely. So what is the single most serious threat to American national security? Think of one nuclear bomb exploding in one city, and then work on that for a little bit. Actually, I think a good way to think about this subject, and the reason why I gave you this target chart, is get your mind around one bomb going off in one city, and you've got it. Okay? So here's Vice President Cheney, who argues and argued through the course of the 2004 election, but currently, that this is the biggest threat we face, weapons in the middle of one of our cities, able to threaten the lives of hundreds of thousands of Americans. That's the ultimate threat. And then this is the punchline. For us to have a strategy that's capable of defeating that threat, you've got to get your mind around that concept. I'd say absolutely right on. Get your mind around the concept of a bomb exploding in an American city. For 2005, in what was to be the big 60th anniversary celebration of the United Nations, Kofi Annan impaneled a group of 12 of what he chose as the wisest men and women from all over the country. So Brent Scowcroft was the American representative. Sadaka Ogata, who had been the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, was the Japanese participant. So a really stellar group. And they were asked to consider threats to the globe for the next 25 years. They identified six such threats. At the atop the list, they gave pride of place to nuclear danger. And about nuclear danger, they said, quote, "We're now approaching a point at which the erosion of the non-proliferation regime, which is the non-proliferation treaty and all of its associated agreements, which have basically held back the tide, could become irreversible and result in a cascade of proliferation." So that's the reason they put this at the top of the list. And I would say, in my language, stay on trend line, erosion to the point of irreversibility, after which we'll see a cascade of proliferation. This book has two parts. I already mentioned to you the two big ideas, part one and part two. Part one says inevitable. Part two says preventable. Juxtaposition of the two is contradictory, requires reflection. The first proposition says, if we stay on trend line and just keep doing what we're doing, then I believe it is inevitable that a nuclear bomb explode in one of our cities, more than one, but certainly one. And I believe, trying to make my own best estimate, that the probability of this happening is greater than even in a decade after 2004, that is, by 2014. That means I bet $51 against $49, stay on trend line, and this happens. The second proposition, which is the more important, is that this is preventable. That is, that there exists a feasible, affordable agenda of actions that we could take that would reduce the likelihood of this to nearly zero, some of which we're not taking and others of which we're not taking fast enough. Let me see if I can make this more persuasive. So part one of the book, how do you try to think about the likelihood of an unprecedented catastrophe? So we haven't actually seen anything like this. So it's a little bit like thinking about 9/11 before 9/11. There's no, I try to survey scientific and social scientific methodologies for estimating the likelihood of low probability, high disutility events. It's not the most well-advanced science, I would say. So in the end, and in order to try to communicate this more clearly, since the target audience for this book is a new member of Congress who does not want to become a policy wonk or expert, but who wants to wrap his or her mind around this topic, because if it's the single most serious threat, and I'm a member of Congress, I need to be addressing it. And similarly, for those of us who think of ourselves as attentive public. So the way that I organize the part one, then, is answers to five questions. Who, what, where, when, how. So the first chapter says, who could be planning a nuclear terrorist attack? As you saw in the movie, they took that line out of the book, which is the proposition that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda are fixated on this objective. Indeed, if you want to read a grotesque and, if fascinating, account, look at the account in the book of Osama bin Laden's press spokesman explaining why Al-Qaeda's objective is, quote, to kill 4 million Americans, including 2 million children. And there's this fantastic logic that says this is what they're owed to balance the scales of justice for the Muslims that have been killed by what they call the Jewish Christian Crusaders, by whom they mean Israel and the United States, and they take a whole series of battles and events. They do a body count for those, and they rack it up, and they say that requires 4 million. Obviously, if your objective were to kill 4 million people, you're not going to get there by hijacking airplanes and crashing them into tall buildings. So how many 9/11s would it take to kill 4 million? You can do the math, 3,000 times 4 million. So you need to go upscale in violence. With a nuclear bomb in a city, you might kill 1 million people in an event if it were crowded city like New York City. Here in Los Angeles, Those of you who watch 24 would see a nuclear bomb this season. I think it only killed 15 or 16 million people because it was in a neighborhood where they didn't intend for it to explode. If you want to read about Al-Qaeda's search for nuclear weapons, George Tenet, the director of CIA who retired recently, came out with a book last month. And he's got a chapter on nuclear danger, or on the Al-Qaeda's search for nuclear weapons, that advances the story. He's got more documentation on four or five cases in which, since 1993, at least, there's documented evidence of Osama and Al-Qaeda seeking to buy nuclear weapons or materials. There's four instances in which they were scammed. So there's a lot of interesting detail, but his punchline is the following. He says, this is the conclusion. Of all Al-Qaeda's efforts to obtain other forms of WMD, the main threat is the nuclear one. I am convinced that this is where Osama bin Laden and his operatives desperately want to go. So that's the best judgment of CIA and its director for the period in which George was director, which was the 7 years up until 2 years ago. What weapon could they use? You saw a little bit of discussion of that in the movie. Either a weapon that was made by a state, or a weapon made by or made from fissile material that they get that was made by a state. So there's two ways. One, a ready-made bomb. Two, an elementary bomb that would be put together, maybe with a little bit of technical help from somebody, but in any case, using essentially the Hiroshima design for the bomb that the Americans dropped on Hiroshima back in 1945. Very simple and robust design that's been on the internet for 35 years, but requires highly enriched uranium. So a ready-made bomb or a homemade bomb. Where could terrorists acquire a nuclear bomb? I still believe Russia is the most likely place, not because the Russians want to lose any weapons, but because that's where the largest amount of weapons and materials are that are still not adequately secured. But who else? Pakistan, where some of you will be familiar that the father of the Pakistani nuclear bomb program, Mr. A.Q. Khan, was actually also the world's first nuclear black marketeer. So he sold to Libya, because we know this, all this material now been removed, enough starter material to make a bomb, centrifuges, which if you combine with the starter fuel, the uranium hexafluoride, would be able to make a bomb, warhead designs for not just a bomb, but the design warhead, and consulting services. So he was, in the words of Mohammed Al-Baradei, the director of IAEA, he was running kind of a black market Walmarts for nuclear weapons and materials. And A.Q. Khan did not only go to Libya, he went often to Iran, he went to Saudi Arabia. Actually, he was a frequent visitor in the region. So where could terrorists get a bomb? I would say most likely place is Russia, not unlikely place Pakistan, and North Korea is actually the most likely deliberate seller of a bomb. When could terrorists launch their first nuclear attack? When they get a bomb. In the introduction to the book, I tell the story of Dragonfire. Dragonfire is code name for a CIA agent who reported that Al-Qaeda actually had a bomb a month after 9/11 and was about to explode it in New York. So what's preventing terrorists exploding a bomb in Los Angeles is they're getting a bomb. When they get a bomb, they could do it. How could terrorists bring a weapon deliver a weapon to the target? Well, think of all the ways illegal things come to one of our cities today. Those are exactly the same ways terrorists could bring a bomb here. My former colleague at Harvard, who was my academic dean when I was dean, Al Carnesale, has been out at the UCLA as chancellor for the last decade. He's just retired last year and actually came back home and has been with us at the Belfer Center this year. But Al likes to tease, and I quote him in the book, that if you have any doubt about the ability of terrorists to bring a bomb to Los Angeles, they could always hide it in a bale of marijuana, which we know comes to Los Angeles. So think of every way that illegal things like people come to our cities. Those are the pathways which could just as easily bring us a nuclear bomb. So part one, on the current path, just keep doing what we're doing. Stay on autopilot. On trend, I believe this is inevitable. It will happen. I told you a little bit about Dragonfire. This imagines Dragonfire's report had been correct. The bomb that Dragonfire warned about was a small bomb that would fit very well in the back of an SUV and would make a blast of about 10 kilotons. So that's kind of the standard. It's a blast slightly smaller than Hiroshima. If you look at this in the red zone, which is a third of a mile from ground zero, all of that disappears instantaneously, vaporized in a ball of fire that reaches about 540,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So that just disappears. And everything out to the blue zone, which is beyond a mile, looks like the federal office building in Oklahoma City after a homegrown American bombed it in 1996. So you may remember the images of a kind of a bombed out shell. Let me even tell you a little bit about Dragonfire. So it's 1 month to the day after 9/11. George Tenet is director of CIA. He walks in to see President Bush for the morning president's daily intelligence briefing and says, an intelligence agent codenamed Dragonfire reports that Al-Qaeda has got a nuclear bomb and now has it in New York and may be about to explode it. So there's a moment to catch breath and then an interrogatory that goes something like this. I mean, it's basically asking, could this really be happening? Did the former Soviet arsenal include weapons of the description that Dragonfire has provided? Answer, yes. Could Al-Qaeda have acquired one of these weapons? Answer, yes. Are all these weapons adequately secured? Answer, no. Could Al-Qaeda have brought this weapon to New York and we not otherwise know anything about it? Answer, yes. So bottom line from this interrogatory was no basis in science or logic or politics for dismissing Dragonfire's report that there was now a live nuclear bomb in New York City about to explode. This is the occasion when then President Bush orders Vice President Cheney to leave Washington because it was thought that maybe there could be a second bomb in D.C. And if there were a bomb in D.C. and it exploded, we would kill the government we have, or it would kill the government we have, and it would disappear. But as a society, we would still want to have a government. So we have procedures in the U.S. government called continuity of government, by which there's an alternative site at which about 1,000 people stay. And on this occasion, Cheney went there, and with them several thousand more people, and they stayed pretty much through a period of several months while all this was getting clarified. You may remember the press would say Cheney has disappeared or he's gone off to his cave or, you know, Cheney missing in action or so forth. No, these were people thinking this might actually be happening. Now, you can read about this in Nuclear Terrorism. Good news, this was a false alarm. But the takeaway is that there was no basis in science or logic or politics for dismissing such a report. If that seems too far away, here's Irvine. In conjunction with the Nuclear Terrorism book, we put up a website. It's called nuclearterrorism.org. You can put in your own zip code and see what Dragonfire's bomb would do in the neighborhood. And as I say, if you're trying to get your, especially for students, if you're trying to get your head around this issue, just start with one bomb in a place where you can identify the coordinates. where you know, oh, wait a minute, that's where my apartment is. Okay. Oh, my goodness, that's where I take a class, or that's where... Okay, how big are nuclear bombs? Most people, when you hear about nuclear weapons, think of these behemoths, these huge warheads that sit on top of ICBMs. And many warheads are huge, but some are quite small. This is an American nuclear weapon manufactured during the Cold War. It's called a special atomic demolition munition. This is too heavy to carry in a suitcase, but works fine in one of these rollies, like a big suitcase that you're rolling through the airport. These were deployed with special forces for use behind enemy lines, blowing up things like bridges or airports or headquarters. So actually exactly what would be appropriate for terrorists. And the Soviet Union manufactured equivalent items. In fact, both in the nuclear terrorism book and in Tennant's story, you can read about the so-called suitcase nukes in Russia that are at least not adequately accounted for. Here is a tactical nuclear weapon. This is the whole thing. This is an artillery shell. This actually will fit in my briefcase. So that's the whole thing. Again, the US deployed thousands of such weapons, and the Soviet Union as well. Okay, let me jump to the good news before you get too discouraged, okay? Preventable. So my big takeaway here is part two, not part one. Part two says this is a preventable catastrophe, preventable by a feasible, affordable agenda of actions. That is, we can write it down. These are all things we know how to do. They're not that difficult to do. They're hard work, but not that difficult. They're not that expensive to do. They don't conflict with most of the other things that we care about in a society. So this doesn't mean giving up all our civil liberties or making America like a jail. These are all things that can be done, which, if done, would reduce the likelihood to nearly zero. How to do this? Obviously, a strategy for prevention of nuclear terrorism needs to have multi-layers. And it's got to be all azimuth, 360 degrees. So in the book, I tell about the many layers and all the different angles. But the core of the strategy is this idea here, that on the supply side, there exists a strategic narrow or choke point that, if we were able to choke it tightly enough, would reduce the likelihood of a bomb going off in one of our cities to nearly zero. And actually, in the book, they borrow a line, in the movie, they borrow a line from the book in which the National Security Advisor says the syllogism from physics. No fissile material, no mushroom cloud, no nuclear terrorism. So all we have to do, all is a lot, but all we have to do is prevent terrorists getting a bomb that a state made or getting some fissile material that a state made to prevent nuclear terrorism. Fissile material comes in two brands: highly enriched uranium, that's what the Iranians are getting close to, and plutonium. That's what the North Koreans have used for their bomb. Neither of these materials occur in nature, so you can't go dig them up. Manufacturing enriched uranium or plutonium is a huge undertaking, multi-billion dollar, multi-year, highly visible. So only states are going to do that. So terrorists are not going to manufacture fissile material. So states are going to make fissile material and have made, states will make nuclear weapons. Our job is to separate these from potential terrorists. How to do this? I propose that the strategy there on the supply side, which is one component of this full-scale strategy, be organized under a doctrine of three no's. No loose nukes, let's lock them all up as good as gold. No new nascent nukes, means no new national production of enriched uranium or plutonium, and no new nuclear weapon states, means drawing a line under the current eight, not letting North Korea get under or cross the line, and stopping there as we not grandfathering these eight forever, but saying, let's stop them where we are and deal with the bleeding cases next, and then go back around and clean up with respect to the eight. Let me say another word about each one of these. So, no loose nukes. Do human beings know how to lock up things we don't want stolen? I gave this presentation or a version of this in Russia, in the Kremlin, back in 2005. And I said, you have it in the Kremlin in Moscow, the Kremlin Armory, which is where they keep the things that the treasures of Russia, icons and crowns and stuff like that. So in any case, with all the chaos, all the confusion in Russia, have any of these treasures disappeared? No, they've lost none. U.S., how much gold do we lose from Fort Knox? Not 1 ounce. So do human beings know how to lock up things we don't want people to steal? Yes, we do. Is there some reason why icons should be more secure in Russia than nuclear weapons? No, that's bizarre. Makes no sense. So, proposition one, all weapons, all material, everywhere, locked up, as good as gold, and where you can't do that, clean it out. Get it out of there. Proposition two, no new nascent nukes. No new national production of enriched uranium or plutonium. This is the line that Iran is testing today. And if you have been reading about Iran, you'll see the international community has been adopting something pretty close to this now. So the UN resolution, the two UN resolutions, call upon Iran to suspend its effort to complete a facility at Natanz that will give it a capacity to enrich uranium. Iran says it needs a capacity for enriching uranium in order to produce fuel for a civilian nuclear power plant, the plant at Bushehr. And they say that's a part of the natural, that's a natural part of the fuel cycle. I say, using this neologism, this new word, nascent nukes, you should think of highly enriched uranium not as part of the natural fuel cycle, but as a nuclear bomb just about to hatch. And similarly, in the North Korean story, plutonium, a nuclear bomb just about to hatch. Because if you get highly enriched uranium or plutonium, the rest of the making of a bomb is rather straightforward. It's hard work, requires some difficulty, but is straightforward. The big hurdle is getting enriched uranium or plutonium. So second no means no new nascent nukes. And I believe if we fail to stop Iran, which I think at this point is about a 50-50, so if we fail to stop Iran, that's staying on course. That's going to end up having this cascade of proliferation in the region, and that's going to make it much more likely that you see nuclear wars in the region, but also the loss of nuclear weapons that increase the likelihood of nuclear terrorism. Third no is no new nuclear weapon states. So this says draw a line under the current 8.5 or something, okay, the 8 plus North Korea, and say stop, no more, and requires specifically in the case of North Korea, not just reaching the agreement that was reached on February 13 this year, which is a good agreement in which North Korea agrees in principle with the other members of the six-party talks to eliminate its nuclear activity, but actually causing that to happen. Now, those of you who've been watching the papers lately will notice that there was an agreement. In the first instance, North Korea agreed to close down the reactor that's producing more plutonium every day from which bombs could be produced. And the U.S. agreed to release $25 million of dirty money that North Korea had in a bank in Macau. Well, it's turned out that bureaucratic glitches have got this situation stuck. The North Koreans are unwilling to act until we show them the money, and the U.S. has not been able to get the banks, to get any bank to accept the money from Macau because it's tainted money. So there's a big kind of a bureaucratic hassle going on. That will end up being resolved, I think, relatively soon. So they'll get their $25 million. I believe they'll also close down Yeonbang. Then the hard slogging will start because they have 10 bombs worth of plutonium today. They've conducted a nuclear weapons test. So I believe it's going to be a long, hard one step forward, one step back of confrontation required to get North Korea to eliminate the weapons and materials that it has. And I don't think this is going to happen quickly. So professors are inclined to do report cards. This report card is not subject to Harvard grade inflation. This is my actual views. In my class, if I graded students this difficult or this realistically, I would probably be hanged. And actually, what I do in my own course that I've just finished teaching last week is I give students what I call their real grade. That's what they deserve. And then their inflated grade, that's what relates to the inflated currency. But in any case, these are real grades, not inflation. Okay. In the first term, you can see, I believe, the Bush administration earned very poor marks. No loose nukes, post 9/11, which is dramatic a wake-up call any country could ever have, as opposed to saying, my God, this could have been with a nuclear bomb. Let's do everything feasible to lock up all weapons and materials tomorrow. The pace of activity sort of stayed about the same. Okay, that's terrible. In fact, interestingly, in the second term, since Bratislava, which was the meeting between Bush and Putin in February 2005, both governments have got this higher up on their agenda. Bush and Putin accepted some personal responsibility for the issue, appointed a named individual responsible for doing something about it. In the American case, it's the Secretary of Energy, Sam Bodman. They now have worked out timetables. They have to give a report every 6 months how they're doing. And the rate at which weapons and materials in Russia have been secured has significantly increased, so that they're currently on a schedule to get this completed by the end of 2008, if this happens. So that's why the arrow is going up. No new nascent nukes. Whatever happened in Iran, Iran was 4 years closer to its goal line at the end of the first term than it was when the Bush administration came into office. So our policy with respect to Iran has been failing, and I would say, unfortunately, it's continuing to fail. And I think if we just continue doing what we're doing, it will fail. I don't think it has to fail. On the no new nuclear weapon states, in fact, what happened was as we focused on Iraq, North Korea withdrew from the Non-Proliferation Treaty, kicked out the IAEA inspectors, reprocessed the spent fuel rods to produce 8 more bombs worth of plutonium, and then last October conducted a nuclear weapons test. So we're not, whatever we're doing is not working. I would say the February 13 agreement was an accomplishment, and the six-party talks are engaged with respect to the issue. So I'd like to be hopeful, and that's why the arrow's going up. For each one of these, it's easy to say no loose nukes. There's been a lot of actions to be taken. For each of these, I've got a list of a dozen things to do. Let me just put them up here and quickly. Here's for no new nascent nukes. And this is for no new nuclear weapon states. Each one of these points we could talk about at length, but I think maybe you get the picture. So let me conclude. Two big points. First, inevitable. Just keep doing what we're doing. and we'll see a nuclear bomb explode in one of our cities. And second proposition, this is preventable. That is, if we were to act on an agenda of no loose nukes, no new nascent nukes, and no new nuclear weapon states, the likelihood would be shrunk or down to nearly zero. Not zero, but nearly zero. So this is for the want of things that we know how to do, that we can afford to do, that we could do. So the basically the argument that I'm trying to make is we should get our mind wrapped around the notion of a bomb going off in one of our cities, not to terrify us, but to focus our minds and to motivate us to do the things that we should do. So that's the argument, and I'll be interested in counter arguments or comments, please.
Thank you very much.